Right, well, welcome to the, I suppose it's the, I think it's the 12th episode of the podcast in general, but it's only the second of the newly rebranded Panic Station podcast. Prior to that, it was Modern Life is Rubbish, but I thought that I would ditch that one, because everybody thought it was a Blur podcast.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
And did you ditch it because right now Modern Life is rubbish?
Well, Modern Life is always rubbish. It's just got more rubbish over the last 13 months, whatever. But anyway, so Panic Station nonetheless. So welcome. What is your moniker? What do I call you? Are you Brona? Are you Northern Ireland?
Oh, no. I'm just Brona.
Okay. Brona McTasney.
McTasney, yeah.
Which is a very fantastic electric sounding name. So you are the much sought after and much talked about Northern Ireland girl. Just situate the listener and tell them. Actually, if anybody hears a bit of errant ambient noise, it is my new puppy Ollie, who is in a trolley right now to keep him from running around the place. But it just means that he whines instead. I'm sure he's not the first dog to be in a Dunn's trolley, to be fair.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
I know, I very much doubt it. I'd say there'd be regular performances from dogs and Dunn's trolleys. Right, so situate the listener and tell them who and what you are.
All right, my name is Brona McTasney. I live in outside Newry now, though I grew up in the centre of Newry, well, from the age of 11. I have an account, a Twitter account, called Northern Ireland Girl 1981, which is extracts from my 1981 diary every day on the day. The diary is from when I was 13 years old and living on Canal Street in Newry. And basically the diary is just everything. It's just everything. It's just boys and cycling around Newry and school and troubles and my disasters at domestic science cookery and the whole shebang.
Yeah, there is a lot of cycling involved, actually. It sounds very Famous Five sometimes.
It is, but we weren't. There was a gang of us on Canal Street. There was maybe about 8 or 9 of us. A core group and then some stragglers.
Was it like Quadrophenia, but with actual bicycles?
But with like actual bicycles.
Right, okay.
Yeah. So we just, we cycled everywhere. When I look at the diary, like, we would cycle to Warren Point. Easy, yeah, on a day.
Well, six miles.
Yeah.
Both ways.
And round the town. We cycled everywhere around the town in a wee gang. And it was the absolute best of crack.
Did you pop a wheelie at any stage?
No, I was too afraid. I couldn't even do, like, no hands.
Oh, right. You played things safe from the off. Very good.
But it was like a wee gang of us. And we're all still friends now. That is like my proper... like teenage gang above and beyond.
And these are all still mates?
We're all still mates.
That's
yes.
Very cool, actually.
Most of us still live in Newry.
Yeah, very good. So how did... Right, what notion did you take to Twitter?
Right, well, Twitter is like... I love Twitter.
As I noticed.
You know, I am a total Twitter addict. Because I love like the tininess of it. I love that you have to be to the point. You know, you can't ramble. Well, you do. But if anybody says, here's a thread, one of 543, I'm like, yep, scroll. So I liked it. And then I noticed that there were people putting out things like a lot of little diaries and stuff from all over the place, you know, and or extracts of famous diaries and stuff. And I thought, well, my sister found the diary in about 2013 or 2014. And we laughed our leg off at it because it was just so... funny.
Do you have a favourite entry that pops to mind?
I like the ones, like, everybody has different ideas of it, but I like the ones where it's just us and we're all fighting the bit out. My daddy is really cross.
There is a bit of conflict there. So I know there's Northern Ireland boy such, and then who else? Have you a big family?
No, there's me and my sister Ethna, who's in the middle, and then John, who's the baby. And John and I just went out at hammer and tongs.
You're the matriarch then, are
yes,
you?
Yes, I am.
Right.
You wouldn't know it. They always say the eldest is either like daft or sensible.
Well,
there you go.
Right, okay, fair enough. Least said. And what form... So is this the actual diary in front of me here? This one?
No.
No. So,
no, the actual diary. The actual diary is tiny. It's one. It's only about that size.
Right.
I'm pointing. That's some use for radio. So it's about three inches.
So it's an A6.
It's a wee tiny. It's even smaller than that. It's one of those little tiny page to a day diaries with the really paper thin pages.
Like a Gideon Bible.
That's exactly what it's like.
Very good.
That's exactly what it's like.
Did you get a Gideon Bible given to you?
Yes,
in first year.
I still have mine.
I absolutely don't have mine. But I'm sure it's about somewhere. I can't say it was well thumbed.
That was so weird, wasn't it? Everybody getting a Gideon Bible.
Yeah, here's a Bible. Congratulations. You're going to be doing your...
But I did. I just loved the sound of it and the feel of it. Those little pages, they were great.
Yeah.
But I never read it.
Speaking of, I never read it. Did your brother or your sister ever pinch your diary and read it and laugh at it?
Well, John threatened to. Many times he threatened to. Ethna had no interest. She had more sense. But he did threaten to, but it was like he knew I would kill him.
There's nothing too salacious in it though. But
No.
I suppose salacious at the time, because there is an odd reference to fancying boys and stuff like that. Like that's precious info for a wee brother to have.
I think the thing is though that, well, for me anyway, and I think a lot of teenage girls at the time, and it's kind of a pity it's gone now, would use the diary to kind of sort out their thoughts and put their mind, you know, like figure out things in their head. I talked to my diary like it was my friend. You know, like I would say, I'm going to tell you about today.
Yeah,
it's
not like today I did this and today. It's more...
Yeah, so it's not even about the boys or stuff. It's just that you might write down how you felt about something.
Yeah.
And that's like, that is a powerful weapon in the hand of a younger brother.
Hell yeah. in the hands of anybody. And I suppose the youngsters these days probably call it journaling.
Yeah. Do they still journal? What I think is they do now is they write for other people. They don't write for themselves.
Yeah.
Like if I'd written that thinking that I was going to put it out, I think it would have been a totally different thing.
It would be sanitized.
Yes.
Not sanitized.
But you would. You would have a different voice, wouldn't you? Because you would, you know, you would be thinking about who was going to read it. And I think that's what a lot of young ones do now. They don't write things down for themselves. They write things about, you know... Like they blog it, so you're instantly writing for people outside of yourself when you do that.
Yeah, it's not just a private sort of...
No, but a journal's a good thing to have, I think. It's really good for sorting out your head.
Yeah,
I
don't write. I kept a diary. Somebody, some poor bastard bought me a flowery diary with an ineffective padlock.
Did I have
it, right? With a wee tiny key that was probably... Probably a health and safety risk, actually.
Oh yeah,
you know,
choking hazard.
Yeah, and I kept it for, I don't know, maybe 4 to 5 days.
Oh.
But I think I do remember, if I could be wrong, and there's no point in even saying I'll go and look at it because it's ceased to exist quite quickly. But I think I might have noted down that the Gulf War had started.
Yeah.
So that would have been, and I think that was the only event ever that was in that diary that lasted all of about 6 days. But yeah, the Gulf War, so that would have been reason enough to keep it going, probably.
Yeah, it would have been. But I think, like, you know how people say to you, if you're really angry about someone, write them a letter but don't send it.
Yeah.
Because you can work it all out. I think when you make your brain slow down to put thoughts into order, that's really good for you.
Oh, it is, it definitely is.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. What I do is, this is a fun task for you listeners. If you write what your problem is, if you have I'm not explaining this very well. If you take an A4 sheet and write down 3 or 4 things that are annoying you, just in the middle of the sheet, and then circle each one, and just so thought bubbles basically,
oh, yes.
And then say, I don't know, say it's work.
Yes.
Okay, so work is one of those, say, 3 or 4 things. And you draw a line out from work and you write down the first thing that comes into your head. So work could be accounts. Then the next thing, staff. Next thing, the next thing.
The public.
Thing. Yeah. The public. Yeah. And you sort of write it down and you try and not overthink it. You just say the first word that comes into your head. It's better actually if you do it with someone. And you have the other person writing while you're just spitting the stuff out.
Oh.
And then from each... sort of satellite word, you can pull out another word and then you can link them up and stuff.
See, that's a good idea.
Yeah, so it's a visual thing, obviously, so it's not translating too well across here, but I would never have kept a diary.
But
the odd time
to formulate your feelings, If you could put words to your feelings, it really helps, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I might actually take up this. See, journaling to me is an Instagram term.
Well, I hate that word.
Yeah, and I think it's a mix of writing down my feelings, but also scrapbooking as well, where you, I don't know, do you take pictures of your feelings, find an image that represents your you know, inner turmoil and stick it in with some print stick?
But then I think you're instantly curating it for somebody to look at it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You're instantly thinking about, what will this look like if I gave this to somebody?
Yeah, you're not speaking your truth for yourself.
No.
Speaking your truth is quite a term now, isn't it?
It is, it's good.
Yeah, Oprah has hijacked it now.
Oh, has she?
Yeah, did you not watch the Meghan
and Harry? Not at all.
Why? Would you have no heeding that at all?
Not
now?
At all.
Right.
Not a bit.
Okay.
Anyway, you don't need to. You don't need to watch anything. You just wait for Twitter to analyse it, and then you don't have
that
to watch
is
it.
Very true. I do enjoy Twitter as opposed to Facebook. There's less... I was going to say there's less racism. It is a bit of an echo chamber for idiots, Facebook now, isn't it?
Well, see, I just think it depends on the quality of your friends. Like, I don't really... family, you can't do anything about.
True.
But if you don't like someone, you don't have to be friends with them.
There's nothing as disheartening, though, as seeing someone that you consider a friend making some sort of outlandishly ridiculous statement on Facebook, and you kind of want to cringe.
You do.
You didn't realise they were a latent racist or a sectarian person.
It's not
or...
just because they feel that way. It's because you didn't you weren't savvy enough to think they might feel that way. Do you know what I mean? Like, when you see somebody being like, oh God, you know, like, did I make a bad mistake thinking that person was somebody else?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes, I think if you know your friends, you know your friends, but there's the odd time where you've seen a real clanger, and you're like, oh God, like, all lives matter, you know, those sort of people.
Yeah, they're lovely.
Yeah, anyway, so throughout there's a sort of an undercurrent of reality running through. Obviously your reality is reality, but it's quite effervescent and, you know, innocent.
Yes.
So
yes,
shifting boys or potentially gearing up to maybe wink at a boy, etc., etc.
Winking at a boy?
There was no shifting back in them days.
No, not really.
There was no blatant shifting.
No.
There'd have been more.
No.
There was more legwork to be done before the shift.
Oh, it was a lot of effort. Mm. It was a lot of effort. And do you know what? I just think, looking back now, the boys were rubbish. I mean, you really had to persuade them. They were rubbish, you know. They couldn't have seen it if you flew a flag in front of them.
I think they probably would have been quite astounded to think that there was somebody writing about them.
Yes.
You know, although you don't go into detail.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, and at that stage, I mean, I hadn't kissed a boy or anything at that stage and didn't, like, for that entire year.
Yeah.
You know, that wasn't the point. It was the thrill of coordinating your walk down Hill Street to match exactly the same time as somebody else would be walking down Hill Street.
Well, believe it or not, I actually did that as well.
You had to.
A little more reluctantly.
There was a perfect time on a Saturday afternoon to be down Hill Street. If you went down too early, you were out with all the mas doing their shopping.
Yes.
And nobody else was out. And if you went down too late, everything was kind of closed and the people had gone on. Yeah. And I would say prime time for walking down Hill Street was 3 o'clock on a Saturday.
Well, funny, I would have been cruising the streets of the main streets in Uri probably from around 95, 96.
Right.
So it would have been second year.
Right.
You know, so, you know, the shock of coming to school in Uri had abated. You know, after first year and in second year, I was friends with a couple of girls from Newry, and you go down the town on a Saturday, which meant I obviously had to get bus in. So there was 2 o'clock bus from Newtown. So you would have been in about 25 past half two.
Right.
And you would have met, and the meeting place was outside Woolies.
Outside Woolies.
Outside Woolies. And the prime sole intention of going down the town was to look at boys' arses, which was fine for me. Wasn't the most exciting thing in the world, but I was a good wing woman, if nothing else. But yes, that was the sole motivation, was to look at boys' arses. Obviously to go into Woolies as well, maybe get a wee CD or something. or
pick a mix, not mix even, and pick a mix.
Not even a tape by that stage, but yeah, looking at boys' arses.
And the thing about Outside Woolies was that they used to have those hexagon type shape things, and each gang sat around one. So like the punks sat around one, and then the tough fellas, you know, yeah, like all the young raw fellas, they sat around one, and then somebody else sat around. We didn't have a place to sit. We just had
what
to.
Were you a geek?
No, I was a ska girl. I was a two-tone girl. And there was only about 10 of us in Europe.
Yeah, I was going to say, ska wouldn't have been a massive genre at that stage.
I mean, I remember one of the fellas wearing fingerless gloves, like Sugg stood out of madness, and somebody calling them a puff.
I was going to say, did he get called a fruit? Sugg's wear fingerless gloves.
Yes, oh yes, he did. If you ever watch It Must Be Love, and he's all doing this thing with his hands, and he has wee fingerless gloves on. Because
fingerless gloves to me would be Madonna.
Oh no, these weren't like that. No, I don't mean like woolly fingerless gloves.
Yeah, no, I don't mean they were like lace ones. Or Cyndi Lauper, would she even
Cyndi Lauper, she had the fingers, but they were lacy too, with all the bangles and loads of stuff up her arms, and yeah.
Yeah. So what? Right. So obviously we're going to come on to music here, because I'm sitting with your manuscript book in front of me with various UB40 that jumps out at me. I fucking hate UB40.
Well, I do now, but they were when they started, they were good. Then they went into like panto reggae mode.
I was going to say, is the term cod reggae?
Yes, cod reggae.
Yeah,
that's what they ended up being. Awful. But they were good at the start. They were really good at the start. Like yeah, like 1 in 10 and Food for Thought, and yeah, they were really good. Even the fact that they were called UB40 was pretty political, because that was the signing on for them.
Yeah. I can't imagine.
But then they went really.
I can't imagine Ali Campbell getting all political, to be honest.
No, they went, no.
Red Wine is still a firm fave at a wedding.
It's a low point.
Isn't it?
It's a low point.
Kingston Town's also drastically bad.
They killed a lot of covers. Yeah. They did a good cover of Many Rivers to Cross, though, but the original's still better, so.
I'm going to take your word for it. I am not a cod reggae, nor am I a ska fan. Where did you go if you wanted to swing your what is two tone?
Two tone was a record label that signed all there was like a resurgence of ska. Ska was like a 60s sound, and it came from Jamaica, and it was like this really simple kind of beat, and it was great. It was very black Jamaican sound, and then that was in the 60s, and then in the 80s, in the very late 70s and early 80s, it came back, but it was very like an English turn on it. So it was like Madness and the Beat and the Specials and the Selector and all of them ones, and it was just brilliant. But you couldn't go out, like there obviously wasn't like a ska night here. I mean, you went, one thing about Newry has never changed. Whenever you go for a night out, they still have sets.
Yeah, so I was going to say, is there a ska set?
You know, like if you go to Belfast and you say to some of them, oh, you know, when's the slow set on? They would look at you as if you were half cut.
Yeah, well, that's, sets. Yeah.
Unless like West Belfast, which is basically just a branch of Newry.
A branch of Newry. On for own.
Yeah, they're culty wannabes in West Belfast. But like you would have a set, wouldn't you? So we used to go to then the Town Hall at a disco on a Sunday night. And then the Prokill Hall had a disco.
Right.
Yes, there was a disco in the Prokill Hall.
Okay.
That might have been a Sunday night as well, I can't remember. But basically there were sets, you know, so you would have like a wee two-tone set, but then you would have like a disco set, it would be all like Funky Town and Shake, and then you would have like a slow set, and you know. So you got your 10 minutes where you liked, you got the music that you liked, and then
the erection section, I think.
What the heck?
The slow set, also known as the erection section.
Well, not then. Then it was everybody run to the toilets section.
Well, I found that that was always good. But then there was always a massive, like, you know, crush at the bar during Crazy For You by Madonna.
Well, like in Cupid's or something.
Well, I was never
because
there
was no drink in the Town Hall. They were junior discos.
Right, okay. On a Sunday night, a junior disco?
Yeah.
On a school night, per se?
Yeah, but it was, I mean, I don't know what time it even started or ended that, but...
And would there have been minerals?
Yeah, I think there might have been a shop outside in the front bit of the Town Hall, maybe, or something. But I just remember, like, the big songs were the live Whole Lotta Rosie, AC/DC, that was massive. I remember one fella knocking himself out on the stage by headbanging too much.
Oh.
And then also was My Perfect Cousin. That was like huge. And yeah, just all, you know, you'd have the sets of stuff and everybody would go mad for their certain songs.
Yeah, because it's...
Cupid's was different though.
I'll take your word for that. I kind of, I'm raging actually in ways that I missed out on that, because I think I would have really enjoyed that whole kind of vibe.
Yes.
Because I suppose, right, what are we looking at here? Well, 84, this chart is that we're going to talk about in a wee minute. But whenever I was a kid, so say 4 or 5, that would have been 86, 87, 88. Mm-hmm. Daddy had a fruit and vegetable shop.
Oh, right.
On the mall. And he would have had me with him before I would have went to school and stuff. And then on a Saturday, obviously, there was no school. And I would have been in the car with him, going into work and blah, blah, blah. And the radio always would have been on. And I just sat listening to the radio.
Yeah.
I loved it.
Yeah.
So, Wet, 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 Gloria Estefan. Would you not like a bit of Wet, Wet, Wet?
No.
Or is it Marty Pello you have an objection to?
I have a big objection to Marty Pello.
Yeah, so
and
do
all
I.
His teeth.
Yeah.
And his Rangers fanaticism.
Yeah, he sunk himself there. He'll mm-hmm. not do much.
I do like it that he turned into a heroin addict. I think he kind of redeemed himself by becoming a drug addict for a while.
It's not many people can redeem themselves becoming a drug
addict. Well, it kind of gave him a cool edge. I wonder if he did it on purpose.
Just
he looked at Dave Gahan and thought, right, you know, we went into Depeche Mode, separated, you know, we could make a connection here.
Yeah. What do you call that song? There's the one,
A Little Help from My Friends.
No, God, no.
Wishing I was lucky.
Yeah, that'll be a particular favourite. But everything after that was sort of really shit, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were all right, I think, until he came on stage in Belfast and managed to start a near riot.
What did he want? Did he want to burn Catholics?
No, he came on wearing a Rangers flag.
Ah, right. Right. Well, I didn't know that. Well, that's that. That's a pin putting that one then. Right. Well, while we're on it here, so I'm going to have a wee look, and I do feel like I'm touching a hallowed and sacred document by looking at this. So the date on this one. So basically, you kept the charts.
Yes.
And what was your point of reference for the charts then?
So what happened was, I was down in Dublin on holidays at my mum's family and went to Penny's, and I found this little tiny book, like A6 size, and it was a pop chart, and it was all lined out, it was properly, and I thought, oh, I could write down the charts because, you know, I love the charts. And then when that wee book ran out, I kept doing it and I kept making my own. So that one that you've got there in your hands is a book from Our Ladies.
Yeah. And
which I pretended to buy for something.
Did you go by the Top of the Pops chart?
No, what you did was, the charts came out on a Tuesday afternoon on Radio 1. And I would run home because I lived on Canal Street and went to Our Ladies. So I could run home. And then at a 12:45, Gary Davis, Gary Davis, did the charts.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote them down really quickly and then I filled them out in my book.
Right, and because if you missed it, there was no, you know, rewinding.
No,
BBC
you had
sounds,
to wait till the Sunday for the top 20, and by that stage, it was like
it
old.
Was obsolete, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you had to get it before anybody else had it.
Right, so I see you go to 30 here.
Yes.
Was there no top? Was it top 40 not a thing?
I think. Is there the lower ones than the bottom?
Well, you've some new entries here.
Yes, it was very
okay.
Hard. It was top 20, then it went top 30, and once it got to top 40, it became like a lot of work.
The attention to detail is stunning, because you have your chart positions, obviously your previous week's chart positions, whether they're a climber or a faller,
mm-hmm.
Or whether they've held,
mm-hmm.
And then you have your own
a non-mover.
That's it. And then you have your personal rating, which is I like very much.
Yes.
And I can sort of tell what you like and what you don't like. So I'm going through here. So go to the 30th of November, 84. So I was but a mere baby. I was one on the bit.
Were you?
Yeah. Would I have been more on the bit? 82. I was born in 82. 21st
yes.
November, 82. So I was as near two as you'll get.
Right.
Really. So I'm going to go down your person. Well, number one on that particular week was Wham's Freedom.
Oh God,
is that a?
I loved them. I loved them.
What was your favorite Wham track?
I used to like Bad Boys. I think I could still do the rap from Bad Boys, or Wham rap. Sorry, I could still do that. and I loved Club Tropicana.
If you strip out the cheesy lyrics of Club Tropicana, the music itself, it's the
brilliant.
Instrumental is
brilliant.
Fantastic.
It's brilliant.
I like Young Guns.
Yes, I like Young Guns.
Young
Guns. So go for it.
Yeah. They're quite rugged. They were quite rugged then, weren't they?
Looking back, the signs for George were all there, weren't they? But we didn't know, you know. Just thought he was gorgeous. The short shorts.
Yeah. There was a group of fellas. We had a pub back in the day as well, and there was a group of lads who at that. So you're talking, it was obviously before he got caught in the bugs. But I remember that whenever he was caught red-handed, pardon the expression, it was like a wake, because all the lads who really looked up to George Michael as this absolute pinnacle of what they wanted to be, you know, the women loved him, the lads wanted to be him, you know, and it was like a fucking wake. And some of the older men who didn't give a shit about George Michael or didn't give a shit about anything really said to the boy, what about George Michael, lads? And one of them just looked at me and he says, how did we not know? You know, they'd been emasculated by this awful event.
I said exactly as I remember, do you know what? It's one of those things, I remember exactly where I was when I heard that George Michael had been caught.
Where were you?
I was walking up past the Ulster Hall in Belfast on my way home from work, because I worked in the Bank of Ireland in Belfast, and I was walking, and I just stopped, because I was listening to it on a Walkman, it was the 80s, and I was just like, what? And I thought the same thing. I was like, what?
The dirty fecker.
No, we were just stunned. And I think for girls it was that point. It's when, what is it about people that when they find that a famous person is either married or of the other persuasion, they're like disappointed that that's been taken away from them.
Because that's the only reason.
Oh God, I never marry George Michael now.
Yeah,
you know,
that's done.
That was the only thing holding it back.
I don't remember where I was whenever I heard it. But I remember, do you remember he answered back with Outside?
Yes.
And that unbelievable video.
Yes.
I remember watching that on Top of the Pops, which at that stage was still on a Thursday evening. I think the world changed irreparably whenever it moved to Fridays.
I had stopped watching it at that stage because it was just a lot of rubbish. I had already got to the stage of modern music is rubbish.
Oh right, okay. and I watched it, and then we knew that it was you know going to be this exclusive, you know, and I watched it just with my mouth open. I thought, you fucking legend. And I rang, because I hung around with like a little sort of clique of people who were all either gay or bisexual or were just fucking up for anything, basically. And I rang one of the boys and I was like, oh my God, did you see that? And he was like, fucking brilliant. What a legend. So poor old George, no longer with us.
Well, do you know what? I still adore him, and that I think was the saddest. I know people are, you know, they're like, oh, David Bowie, and that was sad. But George was just, my heart broke because he was so lovely.
Yeah.
My heart broke, and really still now, still sad about George.
Well, it is a well-known point of slagging from my friends to me whenever I get drunk, especially if I'm on my Jack Todd in the house, I will whip out the YouTube and play any amount of George Michael songs and cry. I'm a dehydrated mess the next day. So I'm having a wee look here at, I'm going to look at your one stars, because I have worked out that your one stars would be the equivalent to my five stars.
Well, can I just say, because I get a lot, because what I do is I take the chart and I put it out every week on the Twitter account with a Spotify list, so you can listen to the top 20, and the biggest interaction I get on the account is people going, what the fuck were you doing giving such and such one star?
Yeah.
And I just think, you know, that was all that moment. And in hindsight, a lot of those songs I really love now.
Yeah.
But at the time, I didn't. I just didn't. You can't change that.
Well, I'm looking here. So there's one star here for the Pointer Sisters. What's your problem there?
What song was it?
I'm so excited.
It was annoying, wasn't it?
It's a good song, but it's just...
I'm so excited and I just can't hide it. I mean, that's dreadful.
Dreadful...
Lyric?
Like terrible. Rhyming?
Yeah, it's awful.
Yes, but, you know, if you are so excited, sometimes you just can't hide it. It just reminds me of the Crunchy advert.
Oh. Yeah. I'm still not a fan of that one, I know. I've not changed my mind too much on that.
Do you like the Neutron Dance?
Do Neutron Dance. Who was that?
I'm Just Burning doing the Neutron
Dance. Was that
dance.
Madonna?
No, that was the Pointer Sisters.
Well, that was Pointer Sisters.
And it was in Beverly Hills Cop.
It was in Beverly Hills Cop, I remember that. And then they had that weird one where they changed their voice. What was that one? Automatic? And they made her voice all weird.
Yeah, they did. That was that thing that Cher used for. Well, maybe
Cher
it wasn't.
Is allowed to.
Cher's an arsehole. And one star for Wild Boys for Duran Duran. Were you not a fan of Duran Duran?
I hate Duran Duran.
Were you a Spandau Ballet person then?
I liked him. But I hated Duran Duran and I still hate Duran Duran.
Wow.
And. Yes, I feel quite strongly about Duran Duran.
Yeah, I've gathered.
I thought they were absolute rubbish.
Yeah, because...
And then the thing is, though, as well, you see, when you had your music tribe, even if you kind of liked other things, you weren't allowed to because you could only like your stuff you're a teenager.
Yeah.
So even though I quite liked Adamant, I couldn't because he was Madness's big rival in the charts, you see.
And what was Adamant? He wasn't ska.
No.
He was pop.
Well, he was kind of pop, but he came from, like, you know, Malcolm McLaren and all that. So Malcolm McLaren basically invented him. And he had all those Burundi drums and everything. The young stuff, the really new stuff of his was brilliant. He was brilliant.
Were you a fan of the Young Ones?
Yes.
Okay.
I liked the Young Ones because Madness were on it twice and that made them okay in my book.
Yeah.
And I did like them.
Did Adamant, I have a vision of him, but maybe I'm completely wrong. Nine Below Zero were on it.
Oh, they were good.
Do you remember they played it? Was it the Sounds from the Grounds Festival?
They were good. I like Nine Below Zero. Yeah, they were kind of a bit funky, weren't they?
They were a bit funky. I did like, well, obviously, I came to the Young Ones late as a result of watching Bottom. And then.
Oh, you came the other way round?
Yeah, I found that the Young Ones after that then and realised it was much, much funnier than Bottom was.
Well, see, my son likes the Young Ones.
Yeah.
And then I tried Bottom and he didn't like it.
You tried Bottom? Okay.
There is your quote.
Yeah, there is. Alexei Seal ruined it for me though.
Yeah,
he was too shouty.
Yeah, but that was his whole thing when he did start. He just came on and shouted a lot. He had a record, he had a song as well.
Did
and he was shouting, yeah, Hello John, got a new motor. And it was just him shouting, Hello John, got a new motor over and over again.
Yeah, no, very, very annoying.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go to your... So you've got a 5-star here for Paul McCartney.
What is it?
No More Lonely Nights.
Oh, that's a good song.
It's drastically bad. I can't have Paul McCartney at all. See this Nation Sweetheart thing? No thanks.
I'm not very fond of the idea of Nation Sweetheart anyway. I think that's just bandied about. I think everybody gets it now.
It's English.
You have to earn it.
It's an English thing. Yeah, Cheryl Cole was Nation Sweetheart.
Wise up.
It's not exactly, you can't really, you know, tally the two together.
You can't just decide someone's Nation Sweetheart. They become it. You don't just announce that somebody is a Nation Sweetheart.
And Kylie's a Nation Sweetheart. Are you going to fucking disparage Kylie?
I'm not a big Kylie fan. I like some Kylie songs.
Yeah. Name one. Fucking name one.
That I like.
Okay, yes.
Oh, do you know what? She went through a real fit. Didn't she do like a kind of a country album stuff? That was quite good.
She did, yeah.
That was good. I thought that was good. Mm. And I like... when she went and did her... Remember she had that album and she couldn't release it because Diana died and her album was called like Princess or something and then Diana died and she couldn't release the album.
Yeah.
There was some... Like when she went all kind of like Nick Cave and everything like that.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of the Nick Cave, the Wild... What was it called?
Wild
the Wild Rose.
Rose.
Yeah, the Rose. I didn't like it. It was a bit maudlin. Yeah, she does do it though at our concert. I have seen Kylie, I would say... 5 times.
Really?
5 or 6 times. It's just fantastic.
I've seen Chris de Burgh 5 times.
Why?
Because before Lady in Red, anybody of a certain generation will know what I'm talking about. Before Lady in Red, when he had all like Spanish Train and all that old like storytelling stuff, he was massive. I mean, I went to see him in Dublin And then the next night, went to see him in Belfast.
You're fucking blown.
He was massive. And then after Leading Red, it was all destroyed. And then he went all, like, then it was really destroyed after that. He went weird.
Is it Spaceman Comes Travelling?
Yeah, see,
Came Travelling?
When he done all that storytelling stuff, it was good.
Yeah, that, and I do like that song.
Patricia the Stripper and all that stuff.
But Leading Red.
No, it's dreadful.
It's an awful
it
song,
him.
Isn't it?
It killed him, yeah. Terrible.
Yeah. Oh,
truly terrible.
What, do you have a favourite song? That's a ridiculous.
See, in that chart there, one of my favourite songs of all time, I think, is still there. Let me see. Is Together in Electric Dreams there?
Yeah.
That is one of the best songs
ever. Were you a Human League fan?
Yes,
or do you just...
I loved the Human League. I still love the Human League. If you ever see them advertised as being in concert, go and see them because they're brilliant live.
Yeah.
So only the three of them, and the girls just wave their arms about long, go, ooh. And but Phil Oakey's amazing.
Phil Oakey, he's got a certain delivery, doesn't he?
He's got a great voice. And they were so good. I loved them. Absolutely loved them. I loved all that electronic stuff when that came out. I thought that was brilliant. You know, I thought like Yazoo, like having a really soulful voice with the kind of...
Plinky plonk.
Plinky plonk, but like really sterile kind of synthetic, like synthesizer stuff, but with the soulful, like Yazoo. Alison Moyet. Go see her in concert. She's...
Well,
fantastic.
I did see an Alison Moyet impersonator in the Kremlin one night. And I was staying in a bed and breakfast, which is strange enough. I don't know, this comedy of errors ended up staying in a bed and breakfast. And it turned out to be the same bed and breakfast that she was staying in. And I think she might have nicked my mate's phone. But that, I know that's a very salacious claim. And it could be very... untrue.
Can you remember what her stage name was?
Oh, not a clue.
Was she good?
I can't remember. I think she just sang Situation over and over again. to be quite honest. I don't remember. But Alison Moyet impersonator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was
I mean, that's the low point of your career, isn't it?
In the Kremlin of all places.
Yeah.
What, have you ever been to the Kremlin?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I can imagine
Years ago. You
would enjoy a good bit of Kremlin action.
Yes.
There's a campness to you, isn't there?
I love that environment. When I moved to America, I moved to Cincinnati, Ohio, and the only people that looked after me there, because I was on my own, was all the lovely gay boys. They just took such care of me. They found me somewhere to live. They even bought me like furniture and mattresses and stuff, and I got invited to Thanksgiving, and yeah, they were brilliant.
Are you still in touch with all of them?
Yes, a few of them. And I remember going to a gay Tupperware party where the fella did strange things with spatulas.
Right.
And they
Did he have a Tupperware box to put them in?
He put them somewhere.
Or were they just freestyle spatulas?
So I loved that. I love that because that it's just something lovely about that vibe and going to places like that, you know. And everybody's just out for a bit of crack.
I am flicking through here to see what... Listen, I've been very self-indulgent here. To see what...
You're not going to look up your birthday.
That's exactly
what everybody does.
So the date app, good.
Is this the actual day of your
birthday? No, it's the 20th of November, 84. So I'm the 21st of November. Oh, right, hold on. What are we here? This is all 84, isn't it?
Yes, are you 84?
No, I'm 82. But do you have 82?
82 will be on the account, yeah.
Oh, no, it will not. I will
find it later and I'll
send it
to you.
It's something drastically bad, I think, that was number one.
November in 82?
It's not brilliant. I have looked it up before and it's kind of shite.
Mine was Silence is Golden. How's that for a good song?
I don't like that song.
No, I hate it.
I meant to ask you, I know you wax lyrical about Paul McCartney there, but are you a Beatles fan?
Not. I like some Beatles songs. I don't really...
I think they're shit.
Yeah.
Controversial opinion. I'm not a fan of the Beatles.
No, it's
I think if they hadn't have appeared when they did in that sort of post-war, you know, hooray, we're all alive, let's all, you know, have fun, I don't think they would have done
well.
They
basically licked a load of stuff, didn't they?
As white men do.
Yes. But mind you, if you had to give me a choice between them and the Rolling Stones, I'd pick them because I absolutely hate the Rolling Stones.
What's your beef with the Rolling Stones?
Mick Jagger.
Just him in general?
Do you know what? You'd never try to slap in that face.
I like Start Me Up and Miss You. but yeah. I could, because there's a funkiness to them. Jesus, you've really, you've went AC Cole there. I'm going to move on. Yeah, Shaka Khan was number one on my birthday when I was two.
So
2-year-old Leanne would have been very happy with that.
That's
actually
Stevie Wonder.
I do like a bit of Shaka Khan. And I see you have...
Didn't Prince write that, I feel for you?
He did.
Yeah.
I also noticed here that you have given Nick Kershaw as the Riddle multiple stars.
Oh, I loved Nick Kershaw. I loved that song. I still have that single somewhere. Loved it. Yes, see, if you're really good, you got multiple stars.
Like
the ranking was very strict. There was 1 star to 4 stars. If I really hated you, I went to minus.
I think there's 22 stars.
There.
Thank you.
You want to find a Mathis entry?
Yeah, I actually saw one on the account there recently. So, one night in Bangkok, 2 stars.
Oh, but now, what a song.
What a song. The London, a bit like the London Boys, do you remember them?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Killed in a car accident, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, as is the way with Europop stars.
Yeah.
A bit of Alvin Stardust there as well. I could sit and look through that for the rest of my life.
Know.
It's in such good condition too.
I know.
How
I don't know how that got kept so well. I think my mum just tidied everything away.
Yeah, it's a wonder to behold. Do you still keep a diary?
No.
Okay. Is that because you have Twitter?
Yes, that's bad, isn't it? That's bad because all of that will go away. See, the thing about the diary, the thing about writing stuff down is, no matter what happens, pen and paper will never really truly disappear if it's looked after. Whereas Twitter's going to go away at some point. It'll be done, and everything you've ever put on Twitter will be gone.
You think so?
Oh yeah, everything does that. Sure, my God, we were all going to have CDs the rest of our life.
True.
You know?
That is true.
And before that, we were all going to be like floppy disks for like the thing of the future.
Yeah.
You know? All technology goes. That's why you have to keep
things.
But
what on earth could you even conceive that would replace it though?
I don't know. I really don't know.
Screenshots of your brain?
That's what I was thinking.
You know?
Yeah.
So who was the first person to sort of lift on the Twitter account and say, can we do a story about this?
You mean like how did it first kind of get
how did it
right
sort
there?
Of blow up as such?
It blew up because a very weird thing, a very nice thing. A good friend of mine now called Stevie Scullion, who is a singer called Melodian. You ever heard of Melodian?
Yes.
He is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, somebody put it out, like it only had maybe 30 or 40 followers or something like that, and it was grand. And for some reason, he found it, and he was just like, oh, this is something special. And Stevie is one of those fellas that is very, very generous. Do you know what I mean? Like if he sees something that he likes, he will push it and support it, and he'll push the person, and he'll, you know, set it, or, you know, he's great that way. And he found it, and then after that, he just started talking about it, and then the Arts Council, he sent it to the Arts Council and they found it, and then after that it just got bigger and bigger and bigger.
So what, I know you've been a Bell Tale regular.
Yeah.
Every now and again, haven't you?
Yeah. Where is the Irish News? Hello?
Have the Irish News never?
Never.
You're joking me.
No.
Why?
I don't know.
That's very
Belfast
strange.
Belfast Telegraph loves it. Irish News has never come near me.
That is very strange.
Yeah.
Is that an ultimatum there? You've issued?
How dare they?
Or would you just say no? Do you know what?
Well, at this stage, I would
slide
say
on.
No.
Yeah.
Fuck them. Biggest supporter has been Columba.
Ah, Columba's he's an awful man for supporting people that way.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, he is. He's a bit of a legend. So you did a couple of interviews then with Belfast Telegraph, or just who did you? Is it?
It was Gail Walker first of all, who was the editor. And she picked up on, and then after that, it got, then the BBC did some stuff with it. But what I have found is, like, I was never going to make my fortune off it, despite my son going, did you get paid? Did you get paid? I want an Xbox. Did you get paid?
Yeah.
People, especially in the arts world, kind of promise things and then they never come through. With the best of intentions, I think, but just that world, just, you know. So I was quite happy to just keep going with it, and whatever happened, you know. And, The Telegraph, and then the BBC did some stuff, and then I think the maddest thing out of all the mad things is one time I was on Ryan Tuberty's show.
Really?
RTE, yeah, on the radio.
Jesus!
I know, and he was very good. Now, he loved it. But that is when Matt McGinn heard it.
Yes.
So you know that story.
Yes, I know that story. Matt wrote
Matt was on his way down to Limerick to write with a fellow called Mick Flannery, who's a brilliant songwriter too, as is of course Matt. And he heard me on the radio, and he was writing an album called Lessons of War, which is all about children in war. It's a phenomenal album. But anyway, he heard this and he was like, you know, he'd worked with children in Syria and he'd worked with children and all over, you know, amazing stuff. And this one somehow struck a chord with him. And I swear to God, like, I get goosebumps now just even thinking about it, because he wrote that song, Bubblegum.
Mm.
And I didn't know he'd written that. I didn't know anything about it. He didn't know me. I didn't know him. And he got Ciara O'Neill to sing it. And funny enough, I know Ciara through other different ways. I know Ciara, and she's an incredible singer and songwriter. But I didn't know. And it was Stevie Scullion said to me, do you know somebody's written a song about the diary? And I was like, what? And he says, oh, aye. So I contacted Matt, and he was like, oh my God, you know, is that okay? And I was like, are you joking?
Mm.
I mean, who gets a song written about them? In all honesty, that's mad.
It is.
And it's so beautiful.
Yeah, no, I remember hearing it actually. And I think, was it on Across the Lane or something maybe? Is it Across the Lane still a thing? No, that sort of late,
yes.
Later night.
Yes,
sort
like
of
Ralph McLean or something
Ralph
like that.
Or Riggsy used to do it as well.
Yeah.
And on Radio Ulster. And I remember listening to it and I was thinking to myself, you know, and then whenever, I think Matt was maybe in the studio, or maybe the two of them were in the studio.
Oh, that was, yes, that was The Ticket.
And
which is a Thursday night show on a Radio Ulster.
They started talking about it,
yes.
And then I copped on as to who it was, and then they obviously talked a wee bit more about it. So
yes.
I was like, very good.
That was, I was on that show, The Ticket, because my lovely friend Kathy does that show on Radio Ulster. And she said, come on in, we're going to talk about the diary. And I was like, okay. And then she said, oh, and I've got a surprise for you. And Matt and Ciara came into the studio and sang it live, and I had never met either of them.
Right.
So.
Because Matt's quite local, isn't he? He's Hilltown.
He's Hilltown.
Yeah.
But that was the first time I met him. Sorry,
what?
Boy racer.
What an outlandish noise.
On Mullen Street.
Jesus, proper Newry that.
Yeah, but that was the first time, and they performed it and sang it live, and I sat and cried on the radio.
I was going to say, what do you do in that situation? No, I feel
really
awkward if somebody sings happy birthday to me.
Oh, it was really overwhelming. It was really overwhelming. It was just stunning. And I just think, out of all the things that have happened, and a couple of amazing things have happened, there's no doubt, but that was amazing.
What was, I'm going to guess that that's pretty much up there. Because
yes.
That song, once it's done and it's recorded, that's there, you know, that's not going to be replaced.
No.
Like, you know, you would talk about
so
technology
beautiful.
Being replaced. Like, that's there forever
yes.
and ever.
Yes.
What other exciting things have come out of it? Or have you met anybody? Or have you had, you know, have you made contacts with people who have had similar, you know, projects? Albeit, I know, I suppose you didn't, you know, realise it was a project at the time.
I think the thing is, Leanne, like, it changed my entire life, you know? I mean, I was working, I was just admining, and I did a thing with a group of women down here, Next Chapter, which was like a women's thing all along the border. And as a result of that, you got a coach. So I got a coach, a man called Gordon, who was fabulous. And he just said to me, he says, look, do you know what, you're doing this, and there's all these fun things coming off it. He says, but you need to...
This is a working podcast, I think is the term. Hello.
Hello.
We're just recording a podcast, you're famous by proxy now.
He said to me, look, you're doing these two things and you're doing all of this, but he says, would you not think that this is maybe you need to shit to get off the pot and kind of he said it in much more coaching kind of way.
Yes, okay.
But he's like, you know, why don't you think about doing something with it? And he says, why don't you think about how it can change your life properly and how you can make money off it? Which I was like, well, I don't really, you know. You're kind of like, oh, I don't really want to make money off it.
Yeah,
but at the same time, your head is like, God, I can't.
Yeah, you feel like you're mortgaging your integrity.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, by monetizing your...
Yeah, but it needs somebody outside of you to say those things to you.
Yeah. Yeah, I do remember a certain lady saying to me at one stage, I was talking about this fucking ridiculous enterprise of mine here on Monaghan Street, and a lady said to me, you need to realise that you're the product. right? And because I weaved so much personality into this place, and you know, she was right, you know.
Yes.
And
it takes somebody outside of yourself to say that to you, though.
Yeah, it does.
Once you embrace that, it changes things
massively
in a good way. Mm-hmm. In a good way.
Yeah, but it takes a wee bit of. You have to. I don't want to say ego. You have to indulge your ego a wee bit.
You almost have to step out of yourself.
Yeah.
And you know, not think about it as you, but think about it as a project or something. I don't really know how to express it, but you have to step away from yourself almost. Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
You have to put your ego to one side too and just think.
Yeah.
So he said that and I was like, do you know what? You're right. And then I decided, I met a girl who was doing a Masters of Queen's in Public History, which is all about talking about history, not really being a historian. And I thought, well, I'd like that, because I had started doing things with the Public Record Office in Belfast and doing some projects with them about women's words, and they had put the diary in an exhibition and stuff like that. And I had really loved that, because what you find is then when you talk to people, they're like, oh, I kept a diary too. But what people hear, especially women here, do is go, nobody want to hear that about me.
Yeah.
Because we've been told that over and over again.
Yeah.
Everything here, and not just the troubles, everything here is all written by men. Now, I'm not like raging man here. It's just the way it is.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. And there's very few women's voices. And people would say to me, people would give it validation that I never thought it had. Like, well, it's so important. It's so important. And I was like, what? No, it is, because it's a woman's voice. It's a teenager's voice. It's a girl's voice.
Yeah.
So I thought, right, do you know what? I'm going to do it. So I threw the head up. I threw the head up, as I do in life on a very regular basis. And Daddy had passed away and he'd left a bit of money. And I thought, I'm going to take this and I'm going to do this. So I went back to Queen's, chucked the job and went back to Queen's, did the Masters last year, the year before. And it was the best thing I ever did.
What was your initial degree in then?
Politics.
Ah, fuck. Hilarious. I did 6 weeks of a politics course in Queen's and then abdicated.
Oh, did you?
I did indeed. I did not. The university life is not for me.
No. And it's not for everybody. The same time, I had done that too. I'd been in the Bank of Ireland. I threw the head up then and went back to Queen's.
I wouldn't say I threw the head up. It's just, it didn't feel right from the off.
No.
But again, Belfast was a very different place then. So you're talking 20 years ago. You know, it was still quite grey and it was quite, you know, there was no quarters.
No.
At that stage, of which there are so many quarters down there.
Quarters.
And it wasn't the warmest place to be.
No.
Even though the troubles were over, per se, it wasn't for you. I found it a big culture shock, which sounds ridiculous because it's 40 minutes down the road.
No, but it's different.
You know, but it was very
different.
But
see, for me, I had grown up in Belfast, so I was just felt like I was going back. And I loved it, and I went to do the politics degree in
Queen's
89. Yeah, and it was like, I mean, my class was just, politics class then was mad. Bernadette McGillisky's daughter was in it.
Okay.
Peter Robinson's babysitter was in it. My lecturer.
Sounds like a euphemism.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. One of my lecturers got shot in his bed because he was writing a thing about loyalist gun running. And it was just like you were in it. I mean, you weren't in it in the same sense as they were in it in the 60s and 70s, but you were in it, and I loved it. But
well, I mean, late 80s was a difficult time as well.
It was a difficult time. It was scary. Belfast was scary then. There's no point saying otherwise.
Well, I think Northern Ireland
was
scary at that stage. Even like in 1989, so you were, what, first year?
Yeah.
89?
Yeah.
In uni. Just sorry to make you feel fucking terrible about your age.
Thanks.
I was 7.
There's no need for that.
6, 7. But my first memory of a news event was Milltown.
Oh, so yes, I was in Belfast.
Mr. Stone being Mr. Stone. And I remember watching that on TV, but I wasn't shocked by it. I was just like, all right, okay. Fair enough, you know, this man. And I remember the thuds of the grenades and stuff like that, and just watching it on, because obviously it was, I don't know, Kate Smith or somebody was relaying this awful news. So I knew it was fact, and I knew it was something that had happened. It wasn't a TV show, it wasn't The Bill, or it wasn't, I don't know, something, you know, like London's burning or something like that.
Yeah,
I knew that there was something that happened, but I didn't question it because there was so much. It was just the done thing.
Yes.
You know, there was so much. There was a climate, and I've tried to explain this to people who are younger than me and don't get it as much, that there was a sort of a claim, not a claim of fear, but just of trepidation.
You had to be careful.
Yeah. And you had no control over it.
I was in Belfast that week, and of course that was all there was, the Gibraltar 3, and then there was Milltown, and then there was the soldiers in Anderson Town that whole week. And I remember Belfast being so quiet, and I was up, I remember being in Queens in the library and I hear shooting, and it was the Sean Graham buggy attack as
really?
Well. Uh-huh. But I mean, as you say, that, you know, those were all awful things, but you just kind of
see, it's a weird,
and Northern Ireland people have a thing about, you know, you have, well, what was that, you have to know what that was, and we never run away from the stuff, we always run towards it. If there's a bomb scare, you always go as close to the tape as you possibly can.
I'd see what,
whereas everybody who's not from here is like, you know?
Yeah, move.
Yeah.
See, I think that's, and that's what sort of stands out for me, that's what stands out about your diary, is the fact that it's almost the undercurrent of the troubles is running through it, but it's almost like the banal aspect, you know. So there's, you can sense the energy and the excitement about telling a boy that you like him, or your mate threatening to tell that you like a boy, and all that sort of stuff. And then there's this very, and I know Derry Girls, obviously there's that you know, similarity there, where these sort of the troubles just, you know, is sort of going on in the background, like a metronome of awfulness. That's just,
it's
all
such a good way of putting it.
Do you know what? I used to play the drums. Hilarious, right? Another thing that I didn't stick at.
Oh.
And you know your hi-hat, your
yes. Yeah.
So that's the one thing that always keeps going, you know.
Oh.
And that's, but I think metronome is maybe more relatable.
That's
but
really
that,
good.
You know,
that's really good. I like that a lot.
You can use it.
Because it's a background rhythm that's just always,
it's always there. You know, and you may not necessarily tune. Like, I said there that I remember, and I remember vividly and clearly, Michael Stone fucking being mental bastard in Milltown. And I remember being in Granny's sitting room, and I remember the television, and I remember Granda sitting in the chair, and I remember all those things. Don't remember about the soldiers the next day.
Yeah.
Never knew that until many years after that had happened. So obviously I wasn't in the living room that day watching TV with Granda.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe some responsible adult had elected to not put the fucking news on, you know, because it was so awful. You know, so it's strange, the things that stick out with you. But
I think too, what that is, and what, you know, what Derry Girls does so well, and the diary probably does to a certain extent too, is that for teenagers, everything is the same level of excitement. I mean, not excitement, but everything is the same. That, like, big world news is important, but chasing boys wearing woolies, and that is as important.
Yeah.
There's no differentiation, you know, like, that's what Derry Girls does. It's like, while big things are happening, the teenagers are doing their own thing, because that is what teenagers do.
Yeah.
And there's no drama bigger as a teenager than the drama in your own life. Yeah. Nothing bigger.
No, that's true. That's
you
true.
Know?
And I think it's only whenever you get older you realise how massive events like that were. Like, that 3 days or that week of awfulness. You know, now obviously, you know, you were whatever age, what's 18?
No, I was 22 or something.
Okay. you know, so it, you know, me, like, I didn't sort of think to myself, right, well, that man's throwing grenades there, has anyone died?
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, has anyone died whose family are there too that have watched them die?
Yes.
You know, it's only whenever you get older and you get that empathy and you sort of, you know, realisation.
Plus you learn what happened before it, and you learn the history of how the society got to that point. But when you're in that moment, you're just kind of watching the news, and that's just it.
What's next for the diary then? Or do you just let things evolve?
I kind of just let it go, because I just think, I do it every day anyway now, and I just let it happen. And once in a while it gets like a spike. It's really weird. You can see suddenly it gets like a burst of followers. I think, yeah, just see what happens. Like, most recently, Pete Bethidas, do you know Pete Bethidas?
Yeah.
So he has a biography called Broken Greek, which is a fantastic, fantastic book. And I knew he was following the diary, so I didn't make any contact or do anything like
you
that.
You didn't breadcrumb him?
No. But I did kind of just try, and I just, for some reason, tagged him in it and just, and I didn't do anything about the diary. I didn't mention the diary at all. I just said, love this book by Pete Bethidas. If you need to read a book, read this book. It's brilliant. And it just reminds me of my own life so much and that. And he came back and said that he had followed the diary for years, and it was kind of because of the diary. Like, his, he thought his life and my life were very similar.
Yeah.
And that just blew my mind. Because I think there is a connection for all teenagers. And one of the projects that I did, that I hope I will do more of because of the diary, is with Prony. We did a project with women's diaries. We gave 18 volunteers a diary each to read. And it was all women's diaries. They weren't famous women. They were just women. To read the diary and get to know about the woman and then pick out their favourite bits. And we created this diary timeline.
Okay.
Which is brilliant. And it starts, like, the earliest diary is 1798. It's, like, from the rebellion.
Mm.
And the latest diary was mine.
Okay.
So somebody got to read my diary, God love her. But, so we created this timeline, and on any particular day on this website called Dear Diary on Prony, you can click on a day and you can read an entry from me, an entry from a woman in the 1800s, an entry from the woman in 1945, you know. And I would love that to kind of continue.
So that's on the
public, it's on the Making the Future website. Making the Future's project.
Do you have a URL there that you could spit out?
I don't even have to say that, but makingthefuture.eu, I think, and the project's called Dear Diary.
Okay.
So I love stuff like that. And then, of course, because of the diary and because I went to do the Masters, that's why I'm working where I'm working now.
Would you ever, based, you know, obviously, because it blew up and it continues to have, like, peaks of blowing up and stuff like that, would you ever be tempted to write a fiction, not a fiction, but to create a diary for 1982, 1983, 1984.
That's interesting. Can you go back though? I don't think you can go back.
Well, I don't think you can recreate.
There is a 1982 diary somewhere, but I only filled out for half the year, I think.
Well, I think people, you know, especially people that have already been familiarised with, you know, the stuff that you've put out so far, would sense that it's bullshit.
Yes.
You know, if you try to fake it, you know.
Well, like, a publisher came to me and they had done my big fat diary.
Mm.
And then turned it into a TV show, and she's like, you know, we could do the same with this diary.
I think, is it Ray Earl?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she actually replied to me or retweeted something to me one time, and I was like, oh.
Yeah, she follows the diary too. But I don't know if it was arrogance or just, I don't know, but I didn't want to fictionalise it, because I thought if you, like, they wanted me to write it that in the end, you know, I got the boy or I met madness or something like that.
Yeah.
But then how would anybody ever trust the diary again to be true?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. You can't engineer.
Do you agree? Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah,
you can't. Because you could fictionalise it and you could make it have nice happy endings, but I think the kind of fact
people
of it is
can,
it doesn't.
People can smell bullshit a mile away.
Yes.
Which is why I'm so unsanitised whenever it comes to in here. You know, people say to me, did you make those scones yourself? And if I haven't, I'll say, no, I haven't.
Yeah.
Because you can't bullshit people.
No, you can't.
You know, you have to be authentic to yourself. And again, if you, in this case, are the product.
Yeah.
So your product should be authentic and that's how
it
should stay.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go back. I mean, I couldn't write now in the voice of a 14-year-old. You couldn't. It doesn't work.
No.
It doesn't work. People have tried. And, you know, that's okay. But I just think you've got too much hindsight and you're too knowing and you lose that innocence. So I said no.
Would you want to be that age again?
I loved it.
In that time?
Yeah, I loved it. We had a blast. We did all the Child of the Troubles things, you know.
Yeah.
Danced in the spotlight created by the helicopter. You know, we used to go out and do, like, pretend tap dances under the light of the helicopter. And
really?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, jazz hands, you know.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, we had the best time. We had the best time. And the best friends. And we loved our house and we loved Canal Street. And, yeah, definitely. I wouldn't want to be a teenager now.
No. I don't think I would either.
No. I'm not rose tinted, but you know.
Well, I think maybe you don't realise how good things were.
No, you never do.
Until you look back. I love looking back. And nostalgia is a massive thing. People love it, and it's but it is very marketable as well. But there's something about it that fills you up. That's, you know, it's a nice thing. I could quite happily live in my head in the past and bathe myself with the past.
Yes.
Obviously the good bits.
But I think that's what the music does, isn't it?
100%.
It's the tunes.
Yeah, it gives you that happy deja vu.
What's your favourite song then? Do you think from young, like young you, from growing up?
I always say to my friends, of which there are a few, but if I ever happen to be in some sort of a dreadful accident and I'm in a coma, if you bring in Janet Jackson's Escapade and put it on, if that doesn't wake me up, forget about
Would your wee shoulders start going?
Yeah.
Janet Jackson's shoulders, I mean.
I know there's something about, like, you know, when I hear those opening, you know, those, like, I don't know, what's it, like a try, like, ding, 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 ding.
I love that song.
Atlantic 252.
Ah.
My ma's Volvo. Going to primary school in the mornings, the sun's shining for some reason, and it's me sitting in the car outside Granny and Granda's. She's gone in to say hello on the way to work, and I'm sitting outside in the car listening to that song. And I don't want to go in because
the song is on.
If the song hadn't been on, I probably would have went in, but no, because it was on.
Yes.
So that would be. I don't know, it's impossible to say what a favourite song is.
No, but, it is. It changes, you know, every minute, doesn't it?
Yeah. And again, same sort of Shanice, I Love Your Smile.
I Love Your Smile.
You know, great, just great pop.
Oh, I love that
great
song.
Pop
that
songs.
Reminds me of MTUSA.
What?
MTUSA was, I might not even have been on that, for some reason it's tied in my head. It was an RTE every Sunday afternoon, and it was basically like 2 or 3 hours of videos with Vincent Hanley.
During the beatbox?
No, I think that was a bit after me.
Right, I remember the beatbox.
Was that on RTE?
It was on RTE. I don't know if it was an RTE or Network 2. When Network 2 came out, and it was like,
oh my god!
Oh, it was like sexy RTE, or Televisión. That's what it would have been called.
Televisión.
The beatbox. Dave Fanning might have been on it. Never.
No.
It doesn't do it for me. But I always remember from it Sultans of Ping.
Where's my jumper?
And they used to throw on a bit of Soul to Soul every so often. Joy.
And Joy. Something Happens. They were on it a lot as well at that time. Do you remember Something Happens?
No.
They were from down south somewhere.
No, I know of them, but I don't remember. But I would have been a beatbox on Sunday at the chart show, the ITV chart show on a Saturday morning.
Oh yeah.
About 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock.
Yeah, yeah.
It was all right. It was no Top of the Pops, like,
no.
You know, and that's where I learned the word indie, which actually brings me to the closure of our podcast, because on the indie chart, There's No Other Way was always number one.
And always.
Pretty much, yeah. From what I can remember, it always seemed to be on. And so that's obviously a Blur song, which closes the Modern Life is Rubbish. We have squared the circle, or circled the square.
I like
so
that.
How was your podcast? This isn't your first podcast.
Tis,
is it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I read you.
Nobody's ever let me ramble like this.
It's not really a ramble. It's a well-constructed dialogue.
I think when you listen back to it,
I don't listen back. Would you ever consider doing one yourself?
Yeah, I'd like to. I would like to do one that is like just basically sitting down people and saying, just ordinary people, and just saying, tell me about your life. Because everybody has something.
There's a voyeuristic sort of edge to things, isn't there? But this is acceptable voyeurism.
Yeah.
You know, if you get someone to sit down and
But nope. I just honestly think that whole thing of people going, oh, my story's not interesting, is just a lie. Because everybody's got something.
Yeah.
Everybody's got something.
That could be a title for your podcast. Everybody's got something.
Like they've got some kind of disease or something.
Yeah, everybody's got an allergy of some description.
Everyone's got allergy.
So we'll wrap her up now. Thank you very much for sitting down and taking the time to talk nonsense. What are your socials for anybody who wants to take a peek?
Well, the diary is Northern Ireland Girl 1981.
On Twitter?
On Twitter. My own Twitter account is Beebsy MacA, BeebsyMca. It's just nonsense. And yeah, that's it.
Would you ever consider serializing on Facebook? Sorry to throw in an extra one there.
I might do. Yeah, so
Facebook has like as much as it has its pitfalls.
I don't know why I resisted Facebook.
Has a massive, massive, massive reach.
That's true.
And people love nostalgia.
That's true.
As we know, and they definitely do on Facebook, because the demographic has aged up massively on
yes.
Facebook now. And that's not supposed to be a slight, but the people there, you know, really commit. You know,
yes.
that
young
that,
ones don't do Facebook, do they?
That 50 plus sort of maybe 59 to 64 or whatever, like Facebook is the first platform that they've had any experience with, so they
that's
fucking
true.
Love it. Right, so I think you should have a
that's
an Orn Ireann Girl Facebook page.
Yeah, maybe I should.
Yeah.
That's funny you say it, because you know at the job that I'm doing now at North Ireland Screen, and I do all those UTV archives, like I'm wading my way through the 60s.
Unreal.
Brilliant.
Unreal.
Brilliant job. I love it so much. And I'm wading my way through all these films of the 60s. But anyway, I found one and I put it on the Hollywood Facebook page, because I grew up in Hollywood. And it was from the 50s or 60s, and it was like at the yacht club or something like that. And a girl, I put it up on the Hollywood page, and a woman came back to me and she said, "My daddy's in that film, and I haven't seen my daddy in 30 years.
Jesus.
And there's a wee video of him, and he's smiling away, and he's..."
Yeah.
And I just thought, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, that is...
You know, that one person, she hadn't seen her daddy, got even thinking about it,
yeah,
you know?
I know.
And that was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant, and people love that, and people deserve to see that stuff, because just all this thing about how North Ireland's history is told, and it's just either troubles or diddly idle diddle, you
yeah.
know, and it's not that, we're not that, we're neither of those things, and we're both those things.
Yeah,
you know,
I love being from Northern Ireland.
I do too.
Or the North, whatever you want to call it.
The North of Ireland.
The North of Ireland. are you? We should have got the centenary now to look forward to and everything.
Isn't that going to be
the Queen's
fun?
Going to get a Northern Ireland rose? Did you know that?
What?
As part of the centenary celebrations.
What does that mean?
Well, somebody's going to cultivate a rose and they're going to give it over to the Queen, and she's going to stick it in her garden in Buck Palace.
That's lovely.
Yeah. Anyway, right, well, you stick your rose wherever you want to. Thank you again. And yeah, everybody, give a wee follow on those socials. Don't forget to like, comment, share, and all that shit. And Rona, thank you very much yet again.
You're welcome. Love that.